where last we left off, Gidon had just asked for a sign.
What pasuk are we on?
We're in chapter 6, verse...
it was around 12, 13, somewhere around there, wasn't it?
Well, it looks like too many people didn't brave the freezing weather.
Were they running late?
Give them time.
Let's read the psukim, sort of get a bead on where we are. Vayom elav Adonai, so God says, he says to God, now keep in mind, according to the Radak, he does not know that he's dealing with a malach. Now, we didn't really go, and even the Radak goes with the idea that there was a revelation of sorts. He quotes the Medrash that Rashi does, that he revealed himself as an angel. We'll see soon why Radak sticks to the idea that even though in the previous pasuk it says, Vayifan alav, lech b'koch chazeh, that he still does not know that it's malach. We'll see why soon. Vayom elav, imna matzati chayin be'enecha, if I have found pleasure in your eyes, vasita li ot sha'ata midaberi mi. It's a difficult pasuk. Let me translate it literally. And he said to him, if I have found pleasure in your eyes, and you will, vasita really is you did for me, the little translation is ve'asita, and you did for me, vasita liot sha'ata medaberi mi. So the actual translation is in fact past tense, not future tense. I think the general impression though is that we're speaking in future tense. That is, I want you to do an ot for me, that we're speaking with each other. I'm curious to see how the English translates that verse 17 when it comes to "and you will do for me" or "you did for me a sign." How does it translate that in yours?
If I found favor in your eyes, then show me a sign that is you that speaks.
Right, show me, which is future tense, which certainly fits into what we expect to happen soon. We expect that there will be some kind of sign that you are speaking with me. Of course, that by itself is a difficult language, because what does it mean, sha'atam edaberi mi? Are you looking for Yeshua? I have one. Did I bring my... I think I may have brought my... Even the language sha'ata medaber imi, that you are speaking with me, I assume what he means is that you're speaking for God to me, or you're commanding me, maybe. The language is very difficult. How do we have it? Do we, any different translations take a shot at this?
Exactly the same.
How does it? Read it. I'm just curious to see if we hear anything.
And he said unto him, if now I have found favor in thy sight, then show me a sign that it is thou that talkest with me.
Yeah, so the emphasis there... I wasn't actually paying attention, so maybe the same, but the emphasis there is that it is you. Sha'ata medaberi mi. It is you. Which is a very strange language, because you don't really... I mean, that's not not something really you say to God. I mean, if he doesn't think it's a prophet, clearly the translation that's being given is that he thinks that it is God. In which case, it's a very strange lashon. What does that mean, sha'ata medaberi, you are speaking with me? Very strange.
It gives him a sign that so he can tell...
We have to stick with the text though. We have to stick with the text. Show me a sign so I will know that you are speaking with me. See, if you put the emphasis on the you, that it's really you speaking with me, that assumes that he knows that it's God, which the Radak disagrees with, and we'll see why shortly. That's an audacious thing to say. I mean, you have to find some kind of textual proof that it's an ayin. That now you are speaking with me? A little difficult. But the weird thing is, what exactly is he asking for? That is, what? How does it translate the word oath there? What's an oath?
A sign.
A sign. Well, what does that mean? Like he holds up a sign? Or what is what's the general impression when somebody says a sign? What does that mean? You have a sign also in there?
It means a nace.
So the impression, I think, is, generally speaking, is that it's a nace. For instance, a kol ototai umoftai, asher asiti mitzrayim, all the signs and miracles that I did. Of course, then it begs the question, if otot are miracles, then what's the difference between an oath and a mofeth? And I'm sure that there are translations for that. Let's read on and see if we can see a problem with that translation, that it's a miracle that he's asking for. So, let's go on to Pasuk Yud Chet. Al na tamush mizeh, do you have, Serena, you have a text? Al na tamush mizeh, don't leave here, ad boi ilecha, until I come to you, v'hotzeti et minchati, and I bring my offering to you, my mincha, v'hinachti lefanach, and I place it in front of you, v'yomar, and apparently the angel of the sky says, anochi eshev ad shivach, I will stay until you come back. The Gidon bas, so Gidon comes, v'yas gdi izim, he makes a young kid, v'eifat kemach matzot, and he makes him some matzah, habasar sam basal, he takes the meat and he puts it into a dish, into a bowl. V'hamarak sam b'parur. Now, where the marak comes from, this is new. So he's got some kind of soup, which he puts into a parur, is also some kind of container, obviously, that would hold soup. V'yotzei elav, and he took it out to him. El tachat ha'ila v'yagash, until the tree. Remember, he was sitting under the tree, and he approached him. V'yagash, although it's not really clear who's approaching who. V'yom elav malach Elohim, we're in Pasuk 20. V'yom elav malach Elohim. By the way, you may notice in your text that there is a break there in the text. I don't know if many of you have the Masoretic chapters. So the Masoretic chapters would show a break in the original Masoretic documents from the 700s, 800s. You have a separation. That's not just that's a distinct separation. Generally, you don't get that unless you're starting a new chapter, a new idea. And here, it's really a continuation. The second place that you would get that kind of Masoretic break, though, is where God starts to speak. You'll notice that almost every nevuah always has a break, and then you know God starts to speak, and then the break is usually over, and then you go back sort of to normal mode. It gives you almost a palpable impression of otherness. So we have this break. Vayom elav malach Elohim, kach et basar v'et ha-matzot, take the meat and the matzot, v'hanach al ha-sela halaz, put it on this specific stone, ha-sela halaz.
What's the difference between halaz and hazeh? Like, why are they used different words? Do you know?
Usually halaz is derogatory. Et ha'isha halazeh. For instance, when Gehazi, if you remember, there's a story where Elisha was always going to a town called Shunem, and a woman would always give him an attic. This big woman from Shunem would give him an attic to be with. So he asks her what she wants, and she promises. She doesn't even ask for a baby. She just, you know, Gehazi tells her she has no baby. So he says, okay, I can give you a baby. She thinks it's a joke. She winds up having a baby. And then the baby dies. And then the child dies in the field. So then she comes running to Elisha. But Gehazi, and we'll get there when we get there, because Gehazi, interestingly enough, you know, the servant of Elisha, is one of the people that essentially Chazal doomed into not having Olam Haba. It doesn't seem quite that evil, but he's one of, you know, according to Chazal, he's one of the evil people, even though he really doesn't do anything except serve Elisha. So he pushes this woman, pushes her away. Elisha tells her to stop, and he says, it's Ha'isha Halazeh, that woman. It might remind you actually a little bit of Bill Clinton. You remember, I never had relations with that woman. You remember that accent of the word that? That's a pretty good translation of the word Halazeh. Not always, however. Sometimes it just means Hazeh, but I think very often it has connotations. I didn't stop to look it up, and we're too far away for me to plug in my computer and actually do a search on Halazeh, but B'li Neder, I'll look it up, because I believe it usually has negative connotations. Nothing else jumps to my mind. In which case? Does he say the word Halazeh? Well, I could take a look. Which one? First time or second time? Second time. Bamidbar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a look. It would be Bamidbar Yud Aleph. I'll just take a quick look. This is where a concordance or the Torah CD comes in very handy, unless you know Torah Tanakh completely by heart, which I certainly do not. Where is it? Oh no, it's not Yudaf, it's Chaf Aleph. Bamidbar Chaf Aleph. If you could find a Koran Kedash, it would be great. I couldn't find one last time. They always put it in weird places. No, it's Chaf. No, it doesn't say. It says Hamin Hasela Hazeh No Tzila Chamayim. It uses just the word Hazeh and not Halazeh.
20th verse.
All right. Well, you know, I should really never even run this class like Concordance here, since you know we do call on it. It's always an extremely strange place. Yeah. I always figure it'll be right after Tanakh, but it never is.
Yeah, it's not there. It's not
okay. Do you mind if I go on though?
No,
okay. So where were we in the passage? So he says, put it next to this stone. Now he's talking about specifically Hasel Azer, specifically a certain stone. We'll have to see which stone he's talking about. Keep in mind, there's no stone reference so far. The angel is under a tree. He's in a gat. So unless they're talking about the gat, perhaps, but it'll wind up being a little bit different. So let's continue.
What's
on.
A gat again?
A gat is a wine press. What a gat looks like, there's one in the Gush Etzion, so I know exactly what it looks like. It's an ancient wine press. It's right next to Yeshiva. It's two levels. Essentially, it's carved into the limestone bedrock. It looks like a bathtub, essentially. There's an upper bathtub, which is about 2 feet deep or so. Then there is a small channel, which then falls into a lower channel, which I'd say probably is about 4 or 5 feet deep. So that's, I think,
a
gat.
Does one have a wheel that is...
Not for wine. That's a millstone. That's a rechav and a... I always forget what the two are called. That would be a millstone. It would either be for olives or even for grain, but it wouldn't be for wine. As far as I know, there's no stone involved in wine pressing. Oh, I could be wrong. I just, you know that particular wine press. It could be there are others. Yes, absolutely. I believe, yes. Now, how would he hide out in this little chamber? There must have been something bigger than the chamber I'm discussing. Maybe it was inside the mountain so the rain wouldn't get it dirty.
You were down to a machia, for instance.
What's that?
If you were down to a machia, is that what's called machia? Is that where Bar Kokhba's guys hid out in the caves there?
I don't know.
You were not there?
No.
That's a fairly large chamber. And they have
a wine
room where the liquid run
right.
down, and they actually had a way in which they could have propped these rounded bottom pots there so the product would run right into the pot.
Right. I would suspect the wine season in Israel is late summer, early fall. So you're already starting to talk about rain. So in all likelihood, you're dealing with a covered location. Certainly would match the text that we have going on. So any luck? No luck?
And they were below ground, and which makes sense. He was hiding to do this from the police. Can he be doing it below ground?
Right. Mm-hmm. All right, let's continue on and see what the strange part about the oath is. Pour out the soup. The reason why they're going to pour out the soup, by the way, is because soup has no place in the korban. Which means that, so that there's no soup in the korban. You have matzot, you have basar, that's fine. We're about to, of course, you probably know the story, we're about to see fire come up, and it's going to be treated exactly like a korban. But one thing is for sure, Gidon does not suspect this. That's the first impression, that Gidon is not expecting a miraculous event. The first thing is, he's giving him a mincha, but it's not a mincha in a korban sense, because the marak has no place in a korban. It's a meal. Here, have a meal. We'll have to see what the goal of the meal was. Some of you, by the way, were here. I don't know if any of you heard Josh Berman, Rabbi Dr. Josh Berman, when he came and spoke. He spoke about the idea of korbanot. So he discussed the idea of what a korban stands for, and I won't disagree with his points. And I think they support this text, but you may have already heard what I'm going to say. So he takes the staff that he has, a sher biado. He tells him to pour out the I finished chaf, which is he tells him to pour out the soup, and he touches the meat and the matzot. Vatala esh min atzur, and the fire goes up from the rock. Vatochat abasar et matzot, it eats up the meat and the matzot. Umalach Adonai halach menav. And then the angel disappears in the fire. Now, by the way, you should already be thinking of a similar story where a similar event occurs. No. Something closer. Much closer. In this safer, in fact. Anybody? Yes, go ahead.
I forget who it was, but the wife...
Shimshon. Exactly right. Similar event in Shimshon, nearly identical, and it begs for comparison, of course, when you have two events like that in a single sefer, it begs for comparison. But let's continue on, not to a comparison with Shimshon right now. Vayar Gidon, ki malach Adonaihu, and Gidon saw that it was an angel of God. Vayomer Gidon, aha! By the way, that's exactly how you pronounce that. You see the little mapik there? It always drives me a bit crazy. Nothing personal against anybody who really puts stress on mapiks, but sometimes, like, I'm always afraid the Bakor is like going to choke on his mapiks. You know, I think they could be a little more relaxed about the old thing. However, here, you actually, it's a beautiful, it's actually an emotional word. It's, I guess, what do they call it? Onomatopoeia. Ah? Adonai Elohim, God in heaven, God my Lord. Ki alkein ra'iti malach Adonai. Guess what? I just saw an angel of God. Panim el panim. So essentially, he's in great distress. Great distress. All of this supports the Radak's idea that he had no idea that was an angel, because the pasuk seems to imply that until the fire went up to the sky, he was not expecting angelness. The idea, by the way, that an angel is essentially just a representative, a real angel, a metaphysical angel, a messenger, is simply a representative, almost there's a blurry line between angel and God, because an angel will be hanging around, all of a sudden Avram's talking to God as opposed to an angel. Another case that you have that blurry line is on Pesach, right? What do we say? Vayitzei malach ha-Hashem mitzrayim vayihi balayla hu. But what do we say in the Haggadah? Lo yidei malach v'lo yidei saraf el Hashem ba'atzmo, right? That's what we say. Where angels stop and God begins, where there's a covering, apparently, and where there's not a covering, very often these are interchangeable ideas. And it's hard to say whether the prophets... I'm not an expert on Nevuah. It requires a certain expertise, and I don't have. But there are obviously various levels of Nevuah where one sees an angel and where one sees God. Here, it seems to support the Radak's idea. Up to this point, he has no idea. Or he wouldn't have brought the incorrect... He wouldn't have brought a mincha, which is just a meal. And he also would have not been shocked to find out that it was an angel, and figured that he was going to be in trouble.
Yeah, but I mean, if he asked for a name, or he asked for a sign,
you have two choices. You can make the text match your theory, or you can make your theory match your text. Perforce, we're stuck with the interpretation of Oat as a sign, a miraculous event, is a difficult translation. Not impossible. It could be he felt that a malach of Hashem, as in a human messenger of God, was capable of certain acts. I don't know. Stop the sun, maybe. I don't know. Make a staff turn into a snake. Something I can handle. But when all of a sudden I see the fire coming up, and really it wasn't
what
just
fire?
The fire. Oh, I'm sorry. Vatal ha'esh and chafal. Vatal ha'esh minatzur. The fire came up.
What fire? From where?
From the stone.
That's what he's saying. Is it was miraculous?
It wasn't, but he was clearly not expecting it. He was not expecting it. So if
you
still want to, but he had asked for an oath.
It's pretty surprising.
What?
Even if you're expecting, if you know you're talking to an angel and something amazing happens, you're going to say, aha.
Well,
that's not the impression of this pasuk, though.
You know.
It's like, oh, I knew it was God, but wow, when I saw him face to face, I was shakarud. You know, I don't really think that's it. Also, it doesn't fit in with the text. Aha, Adonai Elohim, ki alkein, ra'iti malach el... it's a suddenness of vision, and that's why the Radak stays with this Perush, even though you have difficult, you know.
When we met this character, there was a fluctuation between referring to him as a Navi.
Yeah, exactly.
And a Malach.
Well, no. There was two separate issues. We had a definite Navi, then we had the Malach, but then we had the problem with him being referred to as Adoni and as Adonai, and then the word Vayifen also gave one the impression that there was a revelation. If that's true, so we had a question really last week on the Radak. If there's a revelation, how does Adonai, why are you going out of your way to say that he's still a human form? And the answer is, well, because the pasuk that we just read, which is Chav Bet, is hard to interpret.
All in sort of consistent pattern, you could have Gideon confused, and the language sort of attests to his confusion as opposed to the confusion of the Mephoshim. It's actually saying Gideon himself wasn't quite sure what he was confronting him.
It's an interesting idea. It's certainly an interesting idea. That is, he was wavering back and forth. So therefore, he's certainly shocked that... So he's shocked that his suspicions came, in fact, to fruition.
He was quite sure what it was, and it was what he was not...
All that happy about seeing, or nervous about seeing, but he tested and see. So he was asking for an oath, almost, to see whether it was true. If you still have a problem, I'm not disagreeing.
And whether it was a malach or a navi, an oat is not an inconsistent thing to ask for, because people like Elisha performed things that were miraculous. I mean, a guy could do it, even though he's not a navi.
Yes, that is correct. I guess the question is, why the complete and total shock? So you're saying it wasn't complete and total shock, it was simply a surprise that his suspicions were brought to bear. I think we're reading a little bit into the text, and you have problems with the Marak. You have a little problem with the Marak, because if he had suspected it was really God, he should have also...
It could have been a Korban, but it also could have been the other guy.
But if it was a Korban, it was a puzzle Korban. Oh, you
put him
in
one, he put into a basket, the other one he put in a bowl.
So see whether he chooses the lion. We'll see whether the angel chooses the lion, the tiger, and we'll know what to do.
Can I raise a textual question?
Sure, of course.
Vatal ha'esh minatura.
Yeah.
What is the hay there? Ha'esh. Which esh?
Yeah. That's also yeah. It's true. I don't know what to do with the hay. It usually gives you hay is a what's it called a
Rashi goes nuts. Ha usually says there's a reason for that. He'll
the
go back
English
to
here
say
go ahead.
It just went up, and there went up fire.
Yeah, not the fire.
Say the fire.
Yeah, look, you don't have to. It's possible.
That fire is the same fire that burned at the time of Noah or something.
Well, before we start jumping all over Rashi here, why don't we take a look and see what Rashi says?
We were talking last week about when Moshe approached the burning bush.
There you go, the same fire as the burning bush.
Ooh, you're feeling uppity today. Okay, I don't know what to do with the word ha in the case of esh. I don't know. Just a second. Yeah, nobody I immediately see does anything with it, so it's hard to say. It certainly gives the issue that the fire was somehow extant before. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. It's a good question. I never thought about it, and I don't see anybody immediately who says anything, although it doesn't mean that they're not.
Which means it's obvious. It's obvious. And they're just missing the
obvious. Sometimes. Sometimes things are hidden in haze, sometimes they're not. I used to say Rav Sabato, a Rebbe of mine back in the Gush, used to say, you have to, you know, we're not Rebbe Akiva, you have to be careful about passing on single letters, but it certainly pays to pay attention. I think El Hasela Halaz is more distinctive, because there we have the Hasela, but we also have Halaz, which indicates, you know, a pointing, an identification of something going on. I want to raise an issue, by the way, but I think we should keep reading a little bit, because there is already a problem with the text that we just said, which is Vayomer Gidon, which we're about to say. Vayomer Gidon, aha, Adonai Elohim, Akim Ra'iti Malach, Adonai Panim Upanim. Vayomer Lo Adonai, and then God says to him, Shalom Lecha, peace to you, Al Tira, do not be afraid, Lo Tamut, you will not die. Which means, by the way, Gidon is under the impression, and this makes it a little difficult to believe that he was actually anticipating God, he's under the impression that any kind of direct visual contact with God or angel doesn't make a difference. I mean, Gidon clearly knows the difference between God as a non-substantive being and an angel as the substantive representative of God. He clearly feels that seeing this thing will kill him. We don't know that. All he says is, aha! The only reason we know is because God comes back to him, Vayomer lo Adonai shalom lecha al tira, do not be afraid, lo tamut, you won't die, which means that you have to assume that he certainly felt that he was going to.
Or might have. He didn't say for sure he would have. He could have been.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yes, absolutely. Hello. Vayiven Sham Gidon Mizbeach Adonai. He builds a Mizbeach to God, assumingly, by the way, on that stone, and we'll see why that's important later. Vayikra Lo, and he calls the stone Adonai Shalom. It is the peace of God. Peace, P-A-C-E. Ad Hayom Azen, until this day, Odenu Ofrat Avi Ezri. It's still in the house, it still is in Ofra, among the tribe, the sub-tribe of the house of the Ezris, who are in Menashe. The first issue that you might have, a smaller question, is, well, how did God speak to him if he left? God leaves. He disappears. But the angel really is representative of God. What does it say? It says, "Umalach Hashem halach meinav." He disappears from his eyes. Then Gidon cries out in fear and pain. And now God comes back. Oh, wait a second. I don't understand the popping in, the popping out. If God wanted to communicate with him, so stay around. What is the issue that's specially brought about God's disappearance? So there are three ways to look about it. One is, well, you don't have to say that's the sign, because believe me, the fire enough is a what's that?
It's more miraculous.
What if you think the fire coming up from the stone is not not enough? Huh?
Yeah,
anybody could do that. I think the disappearing trick is more common than the fire from the stone trick, but it's hard to say. So the Mefarshim say something which is interesting, which needs to be understood on two levels. Let me read you the Mefarshim on this. That is Pasuk Chav Gimel. We haven't got to Ot yet. Don't forget. Don't worry. I'll get back to Ot. So Vayomer lo Hashem Shalom lecha al tira. So I believe the Radak says something here, if I'm not mistaken. Come on, don't let me down. Chaf Gimel Shalom lecha Hamalach achar she Allah, after the angel had gone up with the fire, Hishmio akol hazeh, he didn't actually come back. It was simply a vocal connection. Ki ra'ash ayam fached b'dato ki ayam alach, because he saw Gidon's distress, and he felt he had to come back to help out Gidon, which is an interesting idea from two levels. One is, God had felt that I've had enough. From God's perspective, just by making the korban happen and then disappear, and that God has finished his job. How do we know he's finished his job? Because he disappears. My job is over. The korban was done. I'm finished. The only reason he had to come back is because he saw specifically the distress of Gidon. The second issue was that he wasn't really expecting the distress of Gidon. Not that God doesn't expect something. God knows everything. But in the normal scheme of events, Gidon was not supposed to be distressed by this image. Which is interesting, because now, so we could say we did a lot of Sefer Shoftim, if we take a look at Shimshon, this is good, and by the way, we'll get back to the Ot, if we look at the Shimshon event, which is in Perek Yud Dalet, I believe, so let's go over to chapter 14, and see what the similar event is. Yeah? Go ahead.
From the text, there are two sort of entities. I mean, what is Hashem? Hashem speaks to him.
Yeah.
And then there's the angel, and then Hashem speaks. Why when you say came back, why assuming it's the same?
Because
why isn't Hashem, as it were, sort of watching this and sending his angel?
I'm not an expert on this. I'm not an expert on this. However, I think in most cases where you see a Malach Hashem, the communication then from the human side is always speaking directly to God. That is, there's no distinction in text between the angel and direct communication with God. There's no distinction whatsoever. So therefore, it is probably unwise, it's probably not, I'm not entirely sure it's correct to assume that there are two entities. The Malach, we have people talking to the Malach. Malach says to somebody, somebody said back to Hashem. Because if somebody doesn't speak to Malach, once he knows that it's Hashem, he knows that he's communicating with Hashem, and the way that the Sefer, or the Nabi wrote the Sefer, presents it to us as if he's speaking directly to God. And I'll tell you why. Nobody except for Moshe spoke directly to God. Nobody saw God directly. Whatever voice he's hearing, that's not direct communication from God. It can't be. Only he had the ability to communicate on that level. Even Yoshua, when he gets to Yericho, God doesn't come and speak to him. A Malach comes and speaks to him with a fiery sword, etc., etc. So
it's really tough to read Chaf Gimel Vayomer Lo Hashem.
Well,
it certainly sounds like he's speaking to him.
I understand that, but you have the same thing going back, for instance, to let's go back actually to a classic case. Let's go back to one of the first angel incidents, which of course would be the Sodom and Gomorrah, right? The angels that come to Sodom and Gomorrah. Why don't we take a look back there, and you'll find a similar language where it's clearly angels that Avram is talking to, and yet it says Hashem. At least I hope it does.
But in that case,
otherwise I look mighty foolish.
Close
my share. We'll finish up early today.
You almost have to say there's two entities here, that Hashem is being directly spoken to, only because even in that case, the angel has no ability to improvise. He has a direct mission to
Well, that's exactly the point. The angel is God, and God is the angel.
But
he's just a physical representation.
Sodom and Gomorrah, that they had specific chores, and they were to tell Abraham something, or to tell Sarah something, or to save Lot. And at the time Lot wants a reprieve, they can't even do it until they get permission. So here, if he felt that Gideon needed to be reassured, the angel doesn't have the ability to improvise.
Right, but God,
he couldn't have reassured him.
Right, and for all we know, God sent, we don't know from the text whether God sent back the angel, whether it was a dream. The way the Radak puts it, it was simply a kol min hashamayim. It was a voice. Because the Radak is distinguishing between God speaking to him and the angel speaking
right.
to him. I could tell you, I'm pretty sure of other cases. Let me take a look. Anybody, I think it's Chafal, Chafet. Does anybody know where the Sodom and Gomorrah story is? The destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah is, where is it? In Vayera, right?
Yeah.
Vayera lav Hashem. Vayera lav Hashem be'lomim erev. Hu yoshe petarok kol hayom. Vayisai na vayar v'nei shoshan Hashem. Now, I realize the Medrash says that God showed up to have a nice, comfy conversation with him in his tent, and then the angels interrupted.
Right.
That's not the Pshat of the Pasuk. The Pshat of the Pasuk is, the introduction is, Vayera lav Hashem be'lom amrei. He had a heavenly visitation. What was it that the three angels came up and spoke to him? How do we know that? Because afterwards it says, well, first of all, because I think it's the simple pshat. I don't think, we don't have an impression that Avram was on direct speaking terms with God. And here again, I'm getting a little off topic, but here again, you have to be careful with nevuah. What do I mean? If we go to the beginning of Lech Lecha, one would get the impression from reading the first few words of Lech Lecha that God speaks to Avram directly. Let me read it to you. It seems to be without any contradiction. It says, "Vayomer Adonai el Avram lech lecha me'artzcha me'alcha bebeit avicha." God calls him up on the phone and says, "Time to go." Oh, it's a shell record. The Eschel Echoy Gadol. It's a two-way communication, direct revelation, nevuah in its purest form. The only problem is when we actually go and he comes to Eretz Yisrael. What does he say? Ad makom shche, ad elon moreh, vaknani raz baritz, vayera Hashem al el Avram, and God appears to Avraham, vayomer lizarcha ten et aritz azot, vayivisham izbeach la Hashem hanira elav. Hold on a second. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Vayera Hashem al elav, yeah, I thought it was that, I thought it said that was the first time he appeared to him. No, that's not a proof. That's not proof that God didn't show up in Nevuah. It's certainly my impression. What's that?
It's really proof that God did.
No, I wouldn't have said that because now he builds a Mizbeach when he has a. I believe the way I understood it, now it's not quite as tight as I thought it was, but I'll say.
Even the Peshad in Lech Lecha, I mean, when the angel appeared to Abraham, isn't so Peshad when you read a little further and there's a very difficult pasuk that seems to indicate that Abraham is speaking to God again after these guys left. It's
right, but we know only two guys.
That he clearly was speaking to God before he was interrupted, or before he interrupted his conversation. But speak to these guys, and now he comes back to speak to God.
Yeah, that's not my impression. And
actually, they're gone when he goes to plead for the lives of the people in Stonewall.
Keep in mind, only two people showed up. Where does the Medrash get the idea that Raphael came and stayed with Avram? Only two people showed up in Stone. Three people come to Avram's house. Two people
right.
Show up in Stone, leaving one person behind. And I guess what I'm trying to make a point here, although it's not airtight, is it says Vayavor Avram ad makom shchem ad elon morei vaknani az ba'aretz vayera Hashem el Avram. God appeared to him, which is not a word that's not used in the first conversation. And now he says vayiven mizbeach Hashem hanira elav. That gives you the impression, had he seen the vision of God somewhere else, then he would have built the mizbeach there. The words are different. The word vayira to simply vaydaber. And I guess the point I'm trying to make, I'm pretty sure there's a stronger proof that was the first time that God actually appeared. So I just don't remember why I'm thinking that or whether I have textual proof. But the impression is just because it says vaydaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor, that could be a various levels of nevuah. It could be a dream. I mean, the Radak and the above and the Rambam and the Nebuchim go into this idea. It could be a vision, it could be a voice, a disembodied voice, it could be a dream, it could be an image, it could be a mashal almost. There are various levels of Nevuah, and just because it says Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor doesn't mean that God was the idea of a bat kol coming out of Shemayim, that was Moshe, period. And really that's our impression, that was the only one who heard direct communication from God, because it was up to that level. But let's get back to the comparison I wanted to make, which was by Shimshon. So in Shimshon's case, that is in Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13. First of all, what's interesting to note, the angel comes to her and says, you're going to be pregnant, and don't drink wine. We know the whole shabil, and he's going to start to save the people. Vatavo ha'isha, now in 13:6. A man of God, he looked like an angel of God. Well, it's not entirely clear what she means by that, because if they really suspected it was an angel, they also would not have been shocked by the presence that's going to happen later. So the idea of malach Elohim and ish Elohim is all still vague. Norama, oh, terrible. Lo shel tuim is Yahu, vetshmo ligivi. He didn't tell me my name. His name. Now let's take a look. The angel comes back to her. He won't show up, by the way, to Manoach. He doesn't want to talk to Manoach, which is an interesting study in of itself, which we'll get to when we get to Shimshon. He don't want to have anything to do with the husband, just the wife. And then it says in Pasuk Yud, in chapter 13, verse 10, Vatimahera Isha Vataritz Vatagel Isha. So she runs to say to her husband that, he's here. Vatomei Lav Hinei Nira Lai Aish Asher Baba Yomilai. Vayakam v'yelech Manoach. So Manoach goes achrei ishto after his wife. Vayavol al ha'ish. He goes to the man. Vayomer lo ha'ata ha'ish asher dibarta el ha'isha vayomer ani. It's quite clear that they think he's human. Vayomer Manoach ata yavo dvarecha. Let now your words come true. Mayiyah mishpat anar u'maseh. What's going to be happen with this boy? Which means I want some kind of a sense that what you said is true. Vayom alach l'manoach mikol asher amati l'isha tishamer. Do everything I told you. Mikol asher yitzin egefen, etc., etc. Let's go to Tedvav. Vayom alach l'malach, Pasuk 15. Natsra na'udcha, stop for a little bit. V'naseh l'fanecha gdi yizim. So there we have a match to Gidon story. He makes him a gdi yizim. Vayom alach Hashem el manoach im ta'atsreni lo ochal b'lachmecha. You could stop me, but I'm not going to eat from your bread. Very different than the communication to Gidon. You could really feel the sense of difference. The im ta'ase ola, and if you're going to make a sacrifice, la'shem ta'alena. Why? Because he's actually suspecting Manoach of trying to do what? If he's saying, if you're going to make a sacrifice, make sure you make it to Hashem. What's his impression that Manoach is going to be doing? Making a sacrifice to a human being. There's a whole different element going on with Manoach. What's the difference between a mincha and a sacrifice? We'll talk about it in a little bit. Ki lo yada Manoach ki malach Hashem hu. And it says explicitly he had no idea that it was an angel. Vayom Manoach malach mi shimcha. He asks him for his name. And he goes, I'm not going to tell you my name. Vayikach Manoach ikdizi. He takes the kid. This is in Pasuk 19. Ve'et mincha and the offering, whatever that was. Vayal al atzur ladunai. And he puts it onto the rock. Again, same idea. So he's actually, in this case, doing korban directly to Hashem. Umafli lasot, and he starts to do wonders. Umanof yisto ro'im, and they see what's going on. Vayihi ba'alot ha'lahav, and it was when the fire went up. Me'alam is be'ach ha'shamayim. So here it's not called a selah, it's actually been transformed into a mizbeach. Vayal malach Hashem b'lahav ha'mizbeach. The angel goes up with the fire. Umanof yisto ro'im, vayiplu al pnei ha'mar, so they fall down on the ground. V'lo yasaf od malach Lehiraot el Manoach ve'elishto, and the angel refused to show himself anymore to Manoach and to his wife. So you can see the differences really between the story.
That's similar there, though, because Manoach thinks they're going to die. And
that's
the wife
correct.
Convinces him
that
they're
not.
They don't get an angel that gives them reassurance.
That's correct. Which is why I'm not entirely sure I agree with the Radak's opinion. That is, it never really says that Gidon thinks he's going to die. That he's in distress. Yes. That he's surprised. Yes. Oh, no, then you have to. No, I'm sorry, you can't do that because the God comes and says you're going to die.
He's not going to die. So that it was fairly common for people. Certainly, I think we even feel that way today. But those people see something like that and think,
right,
"My God, I'm going to die."
You know,
probably not such a bad.
While we hear, by the way, there's incredible wisdom on the part of Manoach's wife. I know we're doing more of Shimshon than Gidon, and I'll get to the oath, I hope. But I want to, while we're on a roll, I want you to read you the words of Manoach's wife because they're just tremendous. Chaf Bet 22. Vayomer Manoach l'ishto, Mot Namut. We are surely going to die. Ki Elohim ra'inu. Vatomer lo ishto, and his wife says, Lu chafetz Adonai l'hamitenu. If God had wanted to kill us, lo l'chach n'adenu olam incha, then why would he have bothered taking our sacrifice? V'lo heranu kol eila. He wouldn't have shown us all this. V'chayit lo yishmianu chazod. He never would have told us all this good news. Tremendous wisdom, right? He, Manoach, was worried about the miraculous side. Oh, I just saw God. He's like, why don't you use your common sense? If he wanted to kill us, he would, we'd be dead already. You know, and if he didn't want to kill us, and if he told us all these things, then why, he intended to kill us, but he wouldn't have told us all these things. Have a little faith in God is essentially what she's saying. It's a tremendous wisdom, isn't it? Tremendous wisdom on her part.
It's clear why the angel wanted to appear to her.
Yes, absolutely. 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 Yeah. Okay, let's go back to our text. So we're left with a bunch of questions, which I don't know if we can completely resolve. So if he thought he was an angel, then why would he be shocked all of a sudden? David's point notwithstanding. If he didn't think he was an angel, then what's the oath? So you could say, all right, the oath is still miraculous. However, it was miraculous. However, he wasn't expecting a super big miracle, just a minor miracle. But on the other hand, you yourself here have said, somebody said, what about Eliyahu? Eliyahu brought down fire more than once, certainly on him is Mizbeach. He was not confused with God. That would have been an acceptable oath. Here, this is over over what Gidon was expecting. So if Gidon wasn't expecting the fire, and he wasn't expecting a korban, what was he expecting? What kind of oath was he expecting if it's a miracle?
Well,
So here's where I personally, you know, I said, what does Oud mean anyway? I mean, Oud is a sign. So I said to myself, if I want to understand what an Oud means, I think it's incumbent upon us to do a little comparative analysis and see where Oud shows up in the Torah, see how it's used there, and see if we can get a bead on this word Oud. What exactly was Gideon hoping for? If he was so shocked and he didn't want God to show up personally because he thought he was going to die, what was he hoping for? What message? And also, what was he asked for? Sha'atam medaberi mi, that you were speaking with me. What did he want? I mean, what was he looking for?
I guess so. Yeah.
Wait.
Same issue.
Right, we could go there, but we have to go earlier. What's the first Oud that shows up in the Torah? The first Oud? Anybody? Exactly right, the Keshet. The Keshet is an Oud. So let me read it to you. The Keshet is the rainbow, of course, when Noah comes out. Let me find it quickly. Everybody's up at you right now.
I'm
going to keep my covenant with you. What's the covenant? And every living thing, it's not only a deal with you, but it's a deal with every single living thing. I'm going to keep my deal with you. What is it? People will never die because of flood. It doesn't cover you for other disasters, but at least the flood, you know, you don't have to buy too much insurance for flood insurance. And I promise you that there won't be another Mabul. Vayomer Elohim Zot Ot Habrit. This is a sign of the Brit. Asher Ani Notein Beini Uveinechem, which I'm creating between you and me, Ubein Kol Nefesh Chaya Asher Itchem Udorot Olam Et Kashti Natati Be'anan Vayita Leot Brit. Once again, the word Ot doesn't come by itself. It's connected with the Brit. Beini Uveina Arex. What do they do with the word Ot? So let's take a look. Our usual impression of Ot, Hamashma, let me read Ramban, which I'm sure is what you're thinking. Vizot Ot HaBrit Asher Ani Noten, Hamashma Min HaOt HaZeh Shelo Haya Keshet Ba'anan Mimaseh Bereishit. Apparently, optics were different in the original creation. If you held the prism up to white light would come out of the prism. Apparently, there was no diffraction of light. I mean, I don't know, maybe everything was monochrome. Everything was either black and white. We always hope for a world where everything is nice and black and white, so maybe it was. There are other opinions that it existed, but it wasn't in that place. And it gets into the whole science of it, which I didn't do ahead of time, so I don't want to. I could try to read it now, but I'm afraid I'll get. Actually, Ramban takes task with this whole thing. He tries to figure out what's going on. It is certainly difficult for us to look. What we could do is we could just assume that the Torah is exactly as described, which means we need to take this exactly literally. But be careful. The question is it literal? The general impression is, and that's how the Ramban starts, is here is the new creation, the miracle, defining a rainbow is a miracle, i.e. something that did not happen before and it now happens. Although if it's a miracle, it's just become nature, so why doesn't it run out of it if it's not a miracle anymore? Okay, so it was a miracle, but it stayed permanent. Well, but it's a little difficult to conceive of the idea that essentially light didn't refract before Noah's time. I mean, it's a little difficult. Not impossible, of course, but a little difficult.
Could you say that it existed, but it wasn't tied to the phenomenon of the Mabul, of the flood?
Right.
And now... seeing of it will trigger a connection.
Yes, exactly right. I believe that's true, and I'm going to show you other cases where that's true, which means that Oud doesn't mean a miracle. It is a physical sign directed to with the intention of directing your intention to a specific event. And the question is, what is that event? And I've already hinted at it. The event is a brit. It's a sign specifically intended for the purposes of making somebody remember a Brit. Let's take a look at other oaths and see whether we support that idea. Now, I'm not trying to say that the rainbow is not miraculous, and that God didn't in fact create the refraction of light right there. He certainly could have. We certainly believe that before Adam created his sin, that the earth was somehow different, that there was no such thing as weeds, and afterwards there are. We believe that. Now, whether we believe that God constructed a Gan Eden in that format and gave Adam his one chance, and then when he blew it, things back went back to the way they were during the original millions and billions of the hundreds of millions of his creation, how you want to play the whole first few chapters of Bereshit is a very difficult task, which I don't want to bite off now, because it really brings up some very important, and, you know, for kids, okay, so you tell them, you know, God, you know, did this and did that, and they just buy it at face value. The concept of evolution, the concept of science doesn't come up. For us who have to deal with these things and reconcile them to our religion, because we believe in our religion, we have to take a look back and say, all right, well, what in this is homiletic? I mean, the Rav was famous for saying the snake. I don't know what the snake was. Whether it was, I think what the Rav meant was, I don't know whether to take it as a literal event or whether it was taken as a metaphorical event. Of course, the problem is that once you open up that metaphorical door, then you could start to say, like some commentaries have said, some critics, that the entire Sefer Bereshit was one big vision. Never happened. It was all one big metaphor, and it's not historical in any sense. So it's a very dangerous line that you play. Now, if you want to, you can close yourself off to that. You can go with the standard, you know, yeshivas, what we learned in first, second grade, and just assume that miracles are miracles in the story. Or, and then, of course, the world is simplified and religion is simplified. Unfortunately, you know, the thoughts get in there, and it's not an easy thing not to deal with evolution, rainbows, and other miraculous events of this nature. Certainly, you know, the splitting of the Red Sea, there God himself says that he orchestrated that in a natural way because the wind blew. But here, in the first ten chapters of Bereshit, you really, a thinking Jew really struggles with this, and I don't actually want to struggle with right now. I'd rather get back to the idea of an oath, just because this is too big of a topic for me to handle, both in the sense I'm not prepared and I'm not up to it personally. I'm not sure I can handle the concept of, you know, a safer Bereshit is homiletic or is factual.
We can phrase it out of it for a minute. There are two sides to this. Obviously, one is that something can be created, an event, whether it's natural or supernatural, with the intent of being a note. But the perception of it being a note is another. I mean,
what do you mean the perception of being an note? How do you translate note?
For example, I mean, in the course of seeing the first rainbow,
right.
Or even seeing the fire come up from nothing. I mean, if you've never seen it before, how would you know that this isn't part of the natural order of things? Why should one be amazed unless there's something that's a trigger? Why would you think that's... If you've never seen it before, why would you think it's unnatural?
Well, that's usually what happens. If you have a normal... I mean, if all of a sudden gravity works... Well, I would say if you normally know that gravity pulls things down and all of a sudden, well, or pulls things towards massive objects, or, you know, such as the Earth, and all of a sudden gravity is repelling things between two massive objects.
You haven't necessarily seen angels before.
Yeah, but I think the logic really is that when you see something for the first time, even today, a magician performing something that goes against what you normally see.
You have a sense of the miraculous. I think that
you get a sense of something abnormal.
I would agree with that. And also, it doesn't necessarily, even if you want to say what you want to say, it doesn't resolve the problem, which is what was Gideon looking for, because Gideon was not looking for the fire. So even if you want to, even if I would agree with what you're saying, that an ode as a miracle is not necessarily something that a person can't deal with as part of the changing nature, I still have a problem. I still go back to my original problem, which is not really answering your question, but it still bothers me. I still want to know what Gideon was hoping for. So let's go to the second ode. The second ode, interesting enough, anybody know? It's a little bit tricky, but I'll ask you the second ode. Actually, I made a mistake. This was the second ode. There was one ode before the Keshet.
Before the
Keshet. Before Noach. What was the ode before the Keshet?
Hebel?
Close. Wrong brother.
Cain.
So let's go back to Cain. Let's go back to the words of Cain and let's see what we could say there. There the word Ode also shows up. I guess that would be about chapter 5, if I'm not mistaken.
The nation will be wanderers or something, and there will be a sign.
Right, but we'll see what the sign was. Oh, yeah, but why did he get the mark on the head? Okay, so here it is.
Yeah.
So let me read it to you. Vayomer Kain, you're right. Vayomer Kain al Hashem, gadol avonim insel. This sin is too great for me to bear. Now, what that exactly means is a whole few sessions in and of itself. So let's avoid. Let's just translate it literally. Hein gerasto to you, divorce me. Ayomi al pnei adama, mipanecha sater, and I'm hidden from your face. Vayiti navanal ba'aretz, and I'm going to wander the land. Vayakol motzei, and everybody who finds me, yahargeni. Obviously, by the way, there are other people walking around the world, which is another issue that needs to be brought up by Bereshit. I know there's a medrash that they married their sisters. That should be left off, and you know, after sixth grade, that should stop. We should be aware that there were other human beings in this time. Vayakol motzei, anybody who finds me, yahargeni, will kill me. I hope I'm not coming off too biblically critical. I just think it's not wise to ignore the Torah itself when it tells us these things. Vayomer lo, so what is he worried about? He's worried about death. He's saying, listen, you've hidden from me, and I'm a walking blob. Anybody who sees me is going to kill me. Now, why would they kill him? Because of his sin? Whatever reason. He's outcast, and therefore they'll attempt to kill him. Vayomer lo Hashem, lachein, therefore, is a response to what you're saying, kol horei kain shabat time you come, the curse sevenfold anybody kills Cain, and that's the deal. The deal is, the promise that God is making is that anybody who kills Cain will get seven times punishment. Vayasem Hashem l'Cain ot l'vati akodoto, and they put a sign that nobody would hurt him. Now that wasn't a sign that says please don't hurt me. It was a sign that says kol ahorei Cain shivatayim you come, which is, it was a deal between Cain and Hashem, which of course puts us back into that word which is always connected, which is usually connected with oat, which is
brit.
It's a brit. The oat is a sign that a brit either it will be established. The next oat in the Torah is, I think, Shabbat. But I'm not sure. Now I got to go to my computer. What's that?
Yeah, oat.
Oat Heliolam. So now the Mepharshim have a big deal, not a big problem, because Shabbat, well, it's not a miracle. It's just the seventh day. I understand. And mostly we feel that Shabbat, the Sabbath, is a miraculous time. And there's the Shabbat Yetera, etc. But, I mean, if you're just looking objectively and you say, okay, the Shabbat is standing in front of me, think about the words. Ot Hili Olam. Well, let me read the actual words. It's in Shemot Yud Gimel. It actually shows up twice, you see. It shows up before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah as part of the Aseret Dibra. Why? This is one of the things where the Jews had to keep, essentially, if we read the Torah chronologically in that sense, they had to get Shabbat right before. And in fact, if you think about it, the man was orchestrated specifically for that event. That's the idea of God giving food was specifically orchestrated with the Shabbat in mind. But that's also, that's a beast of another, whatever it is. It's in Shmot Yud Gimel, I think. Okay. But it took me a while to bring up. Where's the man incident? Here it is. Actually, not Shabbat. It's Pesach. Which is kind of tying, don't forget how that ties back to the whole Gidon story. And you will tell your children that day, Lemor. Actually, it's talking about tefillin. That is part of the deal, is you know that I took out of Mitzrayim. You, on your part, do the Pesach to remember that. And the oat, apparently, is the tefillin, which symbolizes that. So, too, by Shabbat, we have a little bit of a problem. By Shabbat is also the word of the use of the word oat as a miracle.
What was the grit with
that tefillin? How did that tie into the whole Pesach issue? Yeah, we're getting a little bit late, so we have to tie up.
Why did you skip over Moshe and Sniff? Wasn't there an oat there?
I will tell you in a second. I don't have it here, but honestly, I didn't search for variants of the word, so it may. We should close up, so I want to take you to one sort of conclusive idea. And by the way, there are many places where the word oat shows up and it means specifically miracle. I'm not trying to lead you astray from that.
But actually, I think somebody there also commented, oh, it didn't mean a miracle. miracle. It was just convincing argument for Bnei Yisrael that God had sent them.
Right.
And it didn't have to be a miracle. It really went back either to the secret word that he used or whatever it was that would be convincing. This would be convincing.
Correct. Although there are places where Kol Ototayu Moftaya Shesha Ayetim Mitzrayim, there are places where miraculous. I want to read you the one really conclusive place. So if you have a Tanakh, I would suggest if you can go to Yoshua, Sefer Yoshua, Perek Bet, which was with Rachav Hazona, the two spies that come to Rachav Hazona.
What
Tanakh? Perek Bet in Yoshua. And you would go to, let's see. Oh, but, yeah, let's just stick with that and then I'll close up. It's in Bet, Pasuk Yud Bet, 2:12.
Oh, MF.
Where is it?
Yud Bet, at the end.
Yeah, but let's get context. Yep. Let's get a context. Via Nishma, via Yimaspo, Vavenu, we heard, Velo Kama Ruach, the Eastern Techem, Kiashem, Hem, Hualo Kiva Shemayim, Va'al Aris, and Tachat. She believes in God fully. Vata, He Shavuni, swear to me, Bashem, Kiashiti, Imachem, Chesed, I did for you this loving kindness, which means I didn't have to, I just did it. Vashitem Gamatemi Beta Vi Chesed, Unatatem Li, Otemet, a true oath. Here again, there is no oath. There's no oath. The only way to understand oat in this sense is cut me a deal. Vashitam li oat emet. Now, I don't know whether maybe you could say the tikvat hashani, the scarlet thread was the oat, but even if there was a physical representation, there's nothing here that these malachim, in the sense of meraglim, human, were going to do. Here, the word oat is really used specifically as meaning a brit. If that's true, by the way, let's revisit Gidon and we'll close up shop. Gidon then is not looking for a miracle and was in fact shocked that there was a miracle. What is Gidon looking for? Now let's go back to the Pasuk and see where the Pasuk, if we say that oat is a replacement word for a brit, even though there may be actually something you could stare at. Oh, by the way, with Shabbat, what they say is Shabbat is a day that every time you look at it, what does the Ramban say? You'll know that I created the world. The miracle isn't the Shabbat per se, it's the creation of the world. The Shabbat, your keeping of the Shabbat, the Shabbat itself is not an oat, Ramban says. Your keeping of the Shabbat is the oath, because anybody who doesn't keep Shabbat denies creation. Anybody who keeps Shabbat accepts the idea that God created the world. So the oath there too is an act of acceptance, also in terms of a brit. Now let's just go back to this pasuk and then we can finish up with Gidon. Okay. Pasuk of Zion. So he tells him, let's backtrack a little bit. Tetvav, Vayomer Lav, Bi Adoni, please, either my master or my God. Bameu Shia, this is 6:15. Bameu Shia to Israel, how am I going to save Israel? Hine Alfi, my troops, Adalbim Nasha, they're the weakest ones in, or the smallest ones in Nasha. Manochi, Tzadir, Betavi, and I'm the youngest general that there is, colonel. Vayomer Lav, Adonai, Kiyayimcha, I'm going to be with you. Vihikita et Midyan Kishacha, you wipe them out like one person. Vayomer Lav, Inam Atzati Chay Me'enecha, if I've truly found favor in your eyes, Asita li oat sha'ata medaberi mi, and you have made, I'm going to put this in past tense, I know it's against, I'm bucking the trend, and you have made me a covenant that you are speaking with me or that you spoke with me. What I want you to do is you're going to eat bread with me, you're going to break bread with me, and that breaking of the bread is the brit that they're making to seal up or bind the covenant. That is, you've told me I'm going to do this for you. If you go out and fight, I'm going to save you. That's the covenant. You do for me, I do for you. Now that you've made me this oath, let's eat on it. And that goes back. Was anybody here when Rabbi Dr. Berman did his thing? He showed, I don't want to take the time to do it now because we're already over time, but he showed that when Lavan came out to Yaakov to make a deal not to cross each other's borders, it says v'zavachta, v'ashita zevach. There's that word zevach and mincha, and there what it meant was a meal that two people eat, and that was a way of making what was called a brit melach, a covenant of salt, meaning one that actually is set in stone. And the food, the transfer of food, eating at one's table was considered to be, I'm on your side. I accept the terms and conditions. So So either the eating itself, that is the acceptance of the food, was the brit, or that he already accepted that the oath was the covenant that God laid forward, and now he wants a confirmation. If you will hang out and eat my bread as a Navi of Hashem. And what should that remind you of, by the way? What should that remind you of? Maybe. Remember a story in Malachim where Yeravam, who broke away from the north, makes a calf to sacrifice to in a place called Beit El. And Hashem says, go up to this place and tell him what's going to happen, but don't eat there. Right? Remember that? And the false Navi comes and he says, no. You have to come and eat with me. So why did God say don't eat there? I don't understand. The food was treif. Food was treif in Beit El. It was a McDonald's or something. That was a firm guy. What's the problem? The guy's a Navi. All right, maybe he wasn't a true Navi, but there's no impression that he was over the Avodah Zarah. Because the act of eating in the town of Beit El was an indication of an acceptance of the things that were going on in Beit El. So Hashem said, don't eat there, because that eating process, that when a Navi, which is what Gidon may think he is, accepts bread from a person, they accept essentially a certain covenant. There's an idea of sharing bread. That was unacceptable then. Here it was a necessary part. It's just Gidon wasn't fully aware that when he wanted to just cut a standard mincha, which was a human way of transferring a brit, that he was actually getting God instead. I just want to leave you with one thought. A common misnomer, and I know I've sort of hinted at it before, a common misnomer is that the oat was the wool that became wet or dry. That was not the oat. That's never mentioned here. That's asked for later when Gidon asked for a miracle, a nace, and there nace can't be translated in any other way except for miracle, and we'll find out why once he has an oath and he seems to believe God that he would then go and ask for a miracle.